there's always this disconnect. There's the things you love to do, and there's the things you feel you have to do. And I always try to show by example, you don't always have to do what you think you have to, but it's really important to do the things you love.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
So we are here live with my friend, James Altucher. James, it is an honor and pleasure to have you back here. We've known each other for years. James just asked the question. We're like, we better just hit record. Why did you guys adopt again? Well, Jamie and I, we did volunteer work with our teens down in Guatemala about a year ago. And we just fell in love with this little girl in the orphanage. And there's this red tape trying to get over the borders.
Well, it's illegal. You can't adopt in Guatemala for the last 14 years.
Who made it illegal?
The U.S. They didn't like their practices. So I said, hold my beer. And I hired three attorneys on three different countries to try to make it happen. And it didn't happen. What was beautiful is I truly believe that all the energy we put toward that, this little girl did get adopted by a Guatemalan. While they were doing her paperwork, they found she had a little brother. So they all got to be together. And it's amazing and wonderful and beautiful. It was bittersweet at the moment, but it led us to our daughter.
Yeah. So then we just put the word out here and it was a national adoption search. And so, you know, we're here in St. Augustine, Florida, and we think we're going to be flying to, you know, Fargo, North Dakota. And we matched with a girl 20 minutes up the road.
Oh my gosh, that's great.
I've never seen anything like it before. It was the craziest thing. Jamie actually ended up mentoring this young mother and was there to support her, cut the cord. It was the most cordial adoption you've ever been a part of. So it was pretty inspiring.
And now 15 years from now, if the mother shows up, what happens? How does that play out?
We have an open relationship. So we've since gone to the birth mother's mother's memorial. She had her mother passed. And so we went there and met with some family members and let them see the baby. Mom recently got a job. She texted me this week excitedly that she starts her new job. So,
but we have full legal rights. She's already signed anything over. The father is in prison. So he signed things over well before. So yeah. So really,
it's just like a mentor relationship. It's very sweet.
Yeah. And no,
that's great. It's exciting.
Come back in 15 years. So really that's kind closed. Of what done. Every state's different. If you're ever looking into adopting, Florida had pretty protective laws. So
against the adoptive family.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, congratulations once again. Like, that's exciting.
Is actually the first podcast interview she wasn't on.
Yeah. So
Jim was like, you cannot bring her to James'
interview.
I'm not
bringing her with James' interview.
She likes the limelight. She's going to have her own podcast.
Well, and I think this brings us right into, I mean, obviously we love your writing. We've gotten to know you pretty well. I wanted to, for all our 18 summers families out there, let you say it for yourself. Like, you've written 20 books, but Choose Yourself is definitely the one for me that rises to the top. And it had a lot of use for me.
And it's your most recent, right?
No, it's not my most recent, but it is my best selling. And it's the one that really fully encapsulates my philosophy of things. My most recent is called Skip the Line. And maybe it's kind of a almost like more practical applications of Choose Yourself. But Choose Yourself is definitely my book. Capital B book.
Yeah, it is your book. And I wanted you to tell people, what do you consider Choose Yourself is? And then how do parents, you know, help with that quest of choosing yourself for our kids? Because that's a big thing that's going on right now for a lot of the conversations we're having.
Yeah. And I think that's a good question because it could be misunderstood, particularly in the parenting context. So Choose Yourself basically means that most of your life or most of people's lives are spent hoping to be chosen. Like, oh, will I be chosen for college? Will I be chosen for this job? Will my book be chosen by a publisher? Will my idea be chosen by whoever I'm pitching? Will my sales pitch be chosen by the customer? So we're always afraid to not be chosen. Will I be chosen by friends, by a spouse, and so on? And Choose Yourself, the idea is really from my own experience, I was always chasing the flame. Like, I was always chasing, you know, either success by being chosen by people more powerful than me or more financially successful, or I was anxious to be chosen by the right school or job or friends or subculture or whatever. And finally, that didn't work. I mean, I went broke. I lost my relationships. I lost everything. And I had to kind of build from ground up. And I don't mean financially, although I had to do that too. I had to build from ground up, like almost who, what I thought of myself as a person. I had no idea who I was. I was just somebody who was going around saying, please choose me. And I think for portions of our lives, or maybe all of our lives, we all tend to have a little bit of that. And we don't realize we could choose ourselves. Like if I want to, for instance, write a book, I could write the book. No one could stop me from writing the book. And then if I want to publish it, I could publish it on Amazon. And then people say, well, then if you publish it on Amazon, it's just an ebook. No, I could publish it as a paperback on Amazon, or an audiobook, or an ebook, or whatever. And then people say, oh, well, you won't make any money. Actually, Amazon self-published books on average have higher rankings than traditionally published books. So on average, a self-published author makes more money than a traditionally published author. And so there's many reasons. And I'm just using publishing a book as an example. But if you want to do a TV show, of course, you could go to Hollywood and go through years of agony pitching your show. Or you could do a YouTube video, and YouTube videos get hundreds of millions of views, much more than TV shows. Not all of them, but there are many ways to choose yourself for success. And particularly we're seeing in this post-COVID world with remote work and, you know, many jobs and industries have been transformed. This concept of you have to empower yourself, you have to realize that you're empowered, is more and more relevant. And the first steps towards laying the foundation is you have to be healthy, like physically, emotionally, creatively, even spiritually, or else you won't have the right mindset to be ready to choose yourself, to make those moves. I could go on and on, but it is interesting in the context of parenting as well.
It is, absolutely. I was wondering, how do you feel like, does social media play into this need of being chosen, right? Sometimes it feels like if someone else, so we had a friend give an example, like a banana peel on the ground got 1,000 likes, but this like, oh, I carried a paraplegic child to the top of the mountain got like 0, you know? And so yeah. Comparison of feeling like, oh, the banana was chosen over this good deed that I did. So like, as we're parenting our children and we're trying to navigate, you know, this like, choose yourself, like be good enough for you. And that's good enough. Like do the thing you want to do and kind of fuck off to everyone else. Like, how do you teach children that?
Yeah. So let me answer the social media one. It's real interesting because I think when social media was first kind of gearing up, and even in the decade after that, like let's say things like Twitter and Facebook really took over, started taking over the public imagination in 2006, 2007. And then let's say for the next 10 years after, it kept growing and growing, but now you're seeing it slow down and there's TikTok and so on. I think I did get swept up in, oh, I write stuff and people like me and I'm getting more followers on Twitter every day. And I would say in my articles, please follow me on Twitter, please follow me on Facebook and LinkedIn as well. And so I got swept up into it as well and thinking, oh, this will be a good platform to launch other things. And I think that was the wrong way to think about social media. That never really did anything for me other than give me this dopamine hit or whatever. But if you have something to offer of value and you're consistent with it, you'll grow a platform regardless of social media. And the platform, yes, is a way to choose yourself. So when I launch something new, the platform you develop, people who trust you and listen to you, whether it's a big number or a small but very loyal number who really likes the value you're creating, I think that's important. But just throwing out a funny banana for the sake of getting likes will do nothing for you or anybody else. And the person who helps the paraplegic up in the mountain, if they really want a platform, you know, using that experience and having more experiences and being consistent about it, it is useful to build a valuable platform, but not get too swept up in it. Like, I think lately I've almost gone the other direction and not gone on social media much at all, because I just got disgusted with, if suddenly social media decides they don't like you, which is going to happen to everybody, you feel bad if you're too caught up into it. So I just decided to take an emotional break that's lasted for a couple of years now. But in terms of parenting and kids with social media, again, I think has there ever been in history a chance for a kid to do something creative and get suddenly a million likes on something they did on TikTok? Like, I'm not sort of a person who says, oh, social media is bad, you're going to waste all your time on it. Like, if you're doing creative stuff, I think it's an entertainment medium. It could be an information medium. You know, it could be used for a variety of purposes. And if your kids are clear about why they're using it, you sense it's not just for the dopamine hit, but they're really kind of creating something, whether it's artistic or information or knowledge sharing or whatever, then I think it can be very valuable. If it's just for the dopamine hit and to, like, you know, meet boys or girls or whatever, then that's probably not the healthiest use. And so then the question is, how do you communicate that to the kid? And you can't. You could only do it by example. And
that's what I was thinking. You've done a good example because I've watched you from afar and we drop each other notes once in a while, but I've seen you down your social media. And then obviously I know your writing and podcasting goes on and on and on because I know your habits of it, but it's been really cool, James, to watch you bring in the comedy aspect because it just seemed like that's something that you really want. That's where I've seen you really choose yourself. And I don't even think that wasn't a financial thing. There was something called
the opposite.
Yeah, right. That was an expense, I'm sure, especially through the pandemic. You weren't bringing many people in. But I would love to hear just a little bit about that, because I think that's an example of where you really led yourself, where you wanted to go.
Yeah. So I've always loved stand-up comedy ever since I was a kid in the 90s in New York City. I used to go to every like underground stand-up comedy show I could find, but I was terrified to go on stage. You know, now since then, Jim, we've even spoken at the same conferences together. I've kind of overcome my stage, but I was still terrified of going up on stage to do comedy. But around 2014 or 2015, I decided, you know what? I'm going to do it. I really love it. I want to do it. And I did it. And it was fine. Like nothing amazing or bad happened. And then I just decided, oh, I'm going to do it more. It wasn't as hard as I thought. And then of course, the more you do something that's worthwhile doing, it turns out the harder it is. And so I became obsessed. This was an incredibly hard skill that I admired in others, and I wanted to get good at it. So I started doing it 5 to 10 times a week for years, for about 6 years. And my kids saw me do this and they were like, why are you doing this? Other people saw me doing this. Like our mutual friend, Tucker Max, said, why the hell are you doing this? We know you're funny. Why do you need to go up on stage to a bunch of strangers and prove it? And there was many aspects of the skill other than just telling a joke that I really just loved. And I loved the performance aspect. They all saw me doing it and they all saw that it wasn't something I was doing for financial reasons or work reasons. It was just something I loved doing and something that I wanted to get better at creatively. And so I think, again, I don't know what the long-term effects of it will be, but I think it shows them that pursuing something creative is more important than just getting a cubicle job somewhere.
Yeah. Absolutely. Did any of them communicate to you like, hey, I'm noticing you're doing this thing. That's really cool. Like that's inspired me to do X, Y, and Z. Have they had any moments like that?
Not that they would explicitly tell me, but I would see them practicing ideas as if they were doing stand-up, or they would tell me their ideas for stand-up. So I think, and you guys could correct me, but I think a lot of it is just about planting seeds and seeing what grows. Like I remember I used to tell my oldest, I was very much against her idea of her going to college. And I used to say, there is no way you're going to college. And she would literally just turn around and walk away. Like she was not having any of it. She was not listening to me. So I stopped and I just, again, would show by example. Now I went to college, but I would show how fewer and fewer companies are requiring degrees. And I would point out like, oh, you know, this type of job requires a degree, but if you want to do this, why would you spend 4 years going to college when you could spend 4 years doing what you love doing? And she would eventually start to ask questions. What about so I could fall back on a job? And I'm like, well, that's fine. But what kind of job do you see yourself falling back on? And it would usually be jobs that wouldn't require a degree. So if you think about it, like working in an office building in a cubicle or whatever, that usually requires a degree of some sort. But those jobs aren't really, it's not like you could fall back on those. During COVID, we saw 55 million people got laid off. So jobs were not safe.
No. You know, I have a question for you. Okay. So we're talking, you've started 20 companies, you know, 40 million downloads on the podcast, lots of books. Do you think you could have done what you did, James, without your college?
It's a hard question to answer because I think things are different now. But so I don't think I could have done the exact same thing, but I was really interested in computer science and computer programming when I was that age. And so what if I had learned the skills that I didn't need college to learn those skills? I kind of learned those skills outside of college. And in fact, the problem I had is that I did get a computer science degree in college. And then when I had a job in the quote unquote real world, I was so bad at programming that they had to send me to remedial classes to learn how to program. And I've told this to people and they said, oh, you probably weren't a good student. No, I wasn't a good student in general, but I was a great computer science student. I put in my thousands of hours programming computers. I went to graduate school for computer science where I programmed another several thousand hours. And then I worked programming on the campus. But it was only when I left that academic environment and had to do stuff that was, oh, no academic stuff. It was just all, oh, now you have to use this commercial package with this commercial language, with this commercial operating system and putting it all together. I really had no clue what I was doing and I needed those remedial classes. And that's, I feel, when my education really started in computer programming. Technically, it didn't help me. Now, the question is, does the degree help? Maybe. Maybe it helped for the very first job, but then nobody ever asked me ever again if I had a degree.
Where do you lie on that line? Are you still, we are pretty much a 50-50 line of college because only a few years younger than you, but where I grew up in North Jersey, so we weren't far from each other. If you were not going to a four-year college, you were second-class citizen. You had
absolutely
put a ceiling on. It was such a stigma back then. And I've seen that release. And really, thanks to your writing. So I remember there was one piece you did on the Ben Franklin Prince about just using apprenticeship. And we've used that for some of our kids now. And it works. And it's effective. And it's straight to the punch. So we're 50-50. But where do you lie, James? We've learned so much. But I'm curious to know because I haven't asked you in years.
Yeah, I'm 100-0 against college. I mean, sometimes you legally need it. Like if you want to be a lawyer, unfortunately, you have to go to college and then you have to go to law school and get massively in debt. Like right now, the whole thing is just basically a money factory for banks and the government. Like student loan, first off, tuitions go up faster than inflation every single year. And that's happened for the past over 40 years, 45 years. Tuitions have gone up faster than inflation. So why is that? It's because everybody's given a student loan, so they don't think about it. Kids, 18-year-olds don't have any ability to decide if a loan is good for them or not. And so deans of colleges say, oh, everyone's just borrowing the money anyway. We'll keep raising tuition. So they don't even care about what the value of the education is or what inflation is. They just charge because they know people will pay because they're just borrowing. And everyone, all the students think, oh, I'm going to get a great job and then I'll pay it back. Well, now we have this student debt crisis that's really hurting a lot of young people. And even if they forgive some amount of student loans, that might not be fair to the kids who were not forgiven, their student debt's not forgiven and worked hard to pay it back. So it's just a mess right now. And you have to figure 4 years, yes, maybe you could explore different topics and different ideas, but you could do that outside of school. Like we all do jobs and careers that have nothing to do with what we studied in school. And I don't even know what you majored in. I'm just assuming it has nothing to do with what you studied in school. And for me, like I got interested later in writing and that all started after college, like became a massive, voracious reader and writer after college, not in college. Nothing I've ever done career-wise except bad computer programming did I learn in college. The good computer programming I had to learn much at later.
Well, that's so funny because I believe you would say the same thing about your business degree that you learned bad business in.
Remember your marketing class in college?
Oh gosh, the book was from like 1947. And I'm going, what are they talking about? So yeah, I learned literally anything I did for my real estate investment side or the education side, I got in spite of the education I got really, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And what if you could have used these incredibly valuable years, 18 to 22, to actually pursue, to immerse yourself in things you loved and the subculture you really wanted to be a part of. And instead of taking like a random, you know, history class that you probably don't remember anything of. Now, doesn't mean you shouldn't take history, but read a book if you're interested in it. Like you don't have to have a professor lecturing you on it. And there's YouTube videos that are now great. So just the environment's different. And okay, what about the socialization thing? I really don't think anything stops a 19-year-old from socializing.
Conscious at the end of the night after a good party is not really the social thing.
No. And like, I mean, some people don't get social in college. You know, college, you're still, it's like 14th grade or 15th grade. You're still just hanging out with kids your own age. And you realize after college, oh, most of the time I hang out with people not my age. Like, you know, like you said, you're a few years younger than me, but maybe you would have been a freshman when I was a senior. And so we wouldn't have been friends in college, but now that has no bearing at all on whether we're friends.
no bearing at all. Yeah.
And we even go a step further. You know, our children are in high school. Our children are homeschooled for high school. But really what that means is that they get to go deep into what they're interested in and check a couple of the standard boxes on their own time and their own interest and their own whatever, which seems crazy to a lot of people. And even our oldest son is like, okay, wait, so it's not like a diploma. I'm like, no, I mean, I can write you one if it makes you feel better. And he was like, but mom, that's, and so it's just an interesting concept of like, you learn more by doing and by interacting. And he already gets to have mentors and friendships, just like we have with you, with people, you know, a little older, a little younger, you know, he's always either learning or teaching.
I mean, one time when I was in seventh or eighth grade, I was part of this experimental program where for a summer, they had a couple of choices of topics. I chose math, which I was very interested in then. And I was part of an immersion program. So basically 8 hours a day, which I wanted to do, we studied math. Wow. And in a 3-week period, I finished about 4 years of high school math because of the immersion. So basically teachers would walk around and help you if you raised your hand and you needed some help. But otherwise, you went through the book, you took the tests, you did everything on your own pace. And so some people finished much more than me. Some people finished a little less. I was about in the middle, but it was great. And I really learned something. Like, I remember what I learned then. I don't remember anything I learned. Like, I don't remember chemistry or anything else I learned. So I do feel like doing the things you love, immersing yourself in it, really studying it, creating your own projects, maybe. That's a great way to learn things, as opposed to, okay, every 42 minutes, we're going to switch classrooms and you're going to have to study Chaucer and the Canterbury Tales for 42 minutes. And then we're going to study electromagnetism for the next 42 minutes and just all this stuff you might not be interested in.
Broken up too. And that's, we are so into go deep. That's what we've tried to allow the kids to do. So an update for you on Alden, our oldest son, who we've talked about together before. He just started to uncover this big love of fishing. He's like, I want to go into fishing. I want to do this. Well, from our retreats of another family in the Keys, their son was young and running his own charter fishing businesses and was in the ground running. And now he's just turned 18. He's one test away from his captain's license. And his goal is to own his own charter fishing business. And he's already setting it up and he has his whiteboards and plans. And some people think we're nuts. And I'm like, some, but I know people like, seriously, it feels good to know people would be like, oh yes, that's great. I love it. I love it. So
that is really great because, again, look at post-COVID. People aren't flying to Paris to stay at the fanciest hotels. I mean, maybe some people are, but it doesn't seem to be the trend now because everyone's kind of staying at home a little more and they're looking for alternative experiences. Like, let's go camping. Let's go on a chartered fishing trip. And these are valuable skills, which they'll never teach. There's not a high school course like on chartered fishing or a college course on it. It's hard to get these skills. It's not an easy skill to have the boat, to understand all about fishing, to understand the waters. And it's an entertaining. He has to be an entertainer a little bit too. He's making people comfortable and hopefully they have a fun and informative time. What do you go to college for? So you could be, this is no disrespect to Crest Toothpaste, but what are you going to be, a marketing manager for Crest Toothpaste? I'd rather do chartered fishing.
Yeah, that's what we've really tried to. I'm going to give you a lot of credit. The choose yourself was big for that and the Ben Franklin model. We really tried to just say Ben Franklin did apprenticeship. That's how he got most of his boosts. So we agree with that so much.
You know, and it's interesting on the other side of it too. Let's say you're a manager of people. It's the same thing. Treat the employees almost like apprentices. So I always have this philosophy when I'm managing people that I eventually, not too quickly, but eventually I want them to succeed more than me. So eventually they should start their own business and leave. And because I noticed as I was kind of moving up or down in the business world that I would have mentors and then they would, almost all of them would get so disappointed in me when I left. But eventually you leave and have your own boat. You know, to do things like with parenting. Like that's just the
shows
nature
you did
of things.
A good job shows you did a great job.
Yeah, exactly. 100% of them got angry at me.
Wow, that's so funny.
Isn't that interesting?
I would think that the opposite. I mean, because they could almost show off and be like, "I was his mentor."
I would think that too. And then, so I always like what my very first business. I remember four of my employees left to start a competitive business, and I was very happy for them. Like I was confident in myself. Like if you feel abundant. And I'm not talking about money, but if you just feel confident and abundant, let them compete with me. They won't be able to compete directly with me because I had confidence in myself, but it's a big world out there and could start their own companies and I'll hire new people. And, you know, that's just the cycle of things.
And with starting the companies, James, young people, so a lot of people out there like my son, they're looking at things. Let's say, okay, college. Yeah, we understand we're not buying into college. We want another path. Do you encourage them apprenticeship, start a business, both? I mean, some people go, oh, I can't start a business. I'm 18.
And talk about hustle too. Side hustle.
I love your side hustle stuff.
Yeah. You know, I would say all of the above, except for when they say, I can't, because like one time I was sitting down with somebody and he was saying to me, oh, I really want to make YouTube videos and be a YouTuber. This is like almost 8 or 9 years ago. And I said, okay, well, why don't you do it? And he's like, well, I want to get a better camera first and get some good equipment. And you look at your iPhone, it's better than any camera that Francis Ford Coppola used in the 70s to make the most amazing movies of all time. And just do it right now. And you can always do experiments. So I encourage people to experiment all the time. You want to be a YouTuber? Make a 30-second YouTube video. And then next time, make a one-minute one and make a one-minute one 50 days in a row. And just experiment until you either love it and it gets better or you decide you don't want to do it anymore. And at the very least, the downside is you've learned how to make 50 plus videos, put them on YouTube, be a part of a community doing it, and so on. And so if it turns into something big, now you have a business. It doesn't matter if you're 12 years old or 72 years old. So, you know, there's no limits. Like, that's the thing about choosing yourself, is that all of these definitions, like, oh, I can't do X until I'm 30 years old or 12 years old or 20 years old, all that goes out the window.
You're absolutely right. And I think there's a courage there that's going to be required. And that's, courage is something that I wanted to talk to you about today, because there's two things that I've seen you take a lot of courage in, and that is in writing and in self-deprecation. They kind of go hand in hand, but I
think they do.
There is really a power to that. There's a favorite kids book that we have about, I don't know if you ever heard, The Girl with the Ponytail, Sylvette. It was a famous children's book. It was about Picasso's.
It was part of her
Waldorf art curriculum. But this girl in a small town in France, Picasso stayed there for a summer, picked her as his young model. And he does all these paintings. She becomes famous around the world. And he shows her her hidden art collection where she wants to become an artist. And he says to her, this is good, but you have to express more. When you're angry, paint angry. When you're happy, paint happy. There can be no secrets in your artwork. And I was like,
that's really good.
I even said, that reminds me of James. The stuff you talk about, whether it was losing a date that would never happen or a relationship thing with your dad, there were no secrets. And I just, how have you done that? Like, what's brought you forward to that?
Well, I think first off, there's the whole notion of what's a secret. Whenever you've kept a secret about yourself, not like if someone says, oh, don't tell anyone, but I just got fired. You won't tell that secret is private. But like, if there's a secret about yourself, why is it a secret? It's a secret because you're afraid of what people might think if they find out, right? There's fear. And fear is like a horrible, there's enough things in life that we're afraid of. Then to add to it with our own secrets, it's really painful. And so you think like, oh God, I just went broke. If I tell people, they're not going to want to do business with me, or I'm getting a divorce. If I tell people, they'll think I'm kind of a bad guy or ruined in relationships or whatever. And I used to be like ashamed of all these things and not want to say things. And I realized that they were imprisoning me. And it turns out vulnerability really is the currency of freedom. And a good way to be vulnerable is through art. Like Picasso said, a good way to express vulnerability is through art. Picasso was saying, and I'm no Picasso, but for me, it was writing was my artistic medium. And so I felt like the only way you can really be an artist is if nobody actually sees the process of the art. So think about acting. Like if you're going to be an actor, or if you're watching an actor, what's the difference between a good actor and a bad actor? A good actor, you think he's that person or she's that person. A bad actor, you're like, oh my gosh, this is horrible. Like you almost could cringe. Like he's clearly not a 1790s pirate. He's just talking with a Brooklyn accent. He sounds like he's just lives down the street. And it's the same thing. Like with writing, if the person's trying too hard to be like have flowery prose or to be something they aren't, you could tell. But if you're vulnerable, that's yourself saying who you are. And then it becomes good writing. It doesn't need a heavy vocabulary. In fact, it shouldn't. It doesn't need flowery prose. It just needs you to be honest. And that's really kind of the secret of all writing. And it's too, like, one thing about social media is everybody's a writer now. Everyone writes blog posts. Everyone writes LinkedIn posts. Millions of people write books, and that's fine. But I still like to separate out what's really good writing. And that's where people are telling you the truth about themselves and life and how they experience it. Because that's the only thing we know. I don't really know your life. I only know my life. And somebody once told me fiction is the art of telling a lie truthfully. So then that's fiction, but it's still, even fiction is nonfiction because it has to come from your own experience, your own ideas about the world.
Your perspective.
No. Yeah. And you do have to give up your fear. For me, it was a useful practice to give up my fear of telling these secrets, of these things I was ashamed of.
And you felt better now that you have. I mean, because you just write all over the gamut, which I love. But standing here today, you're saying, I'm glad I've done that. You almost feel a little like cathartic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, writing now is the thing I've done for the longest amount of time and put the most amount of work in. And again, it's one of those things, the more you know, the more you realize you need to learn still. But I'm glad now people who meet me, they know what they get. Like my wife, she knows I could potentially go broke any day now. Like it's all, I don't have to hide anything. Like it's all out there. She likes me for who I am. And by the way, she read Choose Yourself and then met me after that. And so my dream, the reason I wanted to write initially is because I wanted someone to read my writing and then like me. So I wouldn't have to like do all the hard work up front. And so writing was a way of outsourcing the hard work to my writing. And so it worked finally.
Yay. Yeah, nice. Well, you earned that because you write at least 2 hours a day, right?
Yeah. 2 hours a day, you know, and it depends. When I was doing comedy, I probably wasn't writing as much. And whenever I immerse myself in something, I probably don't write as much, but I always do one practice, which is I write 10 ideas a day, every day, just to keep that creativity muscle building.
That's great. Fresh. Do you encourage your own children to do 10 ideas a day?
I do. And whether they do it or not, I don't know, but I know I'm always encouraging them to pursue things. You know, there's always this connect, like there's the things you love to do and there's the things you feel you have to do. And I always, again, try to show by example, you don't always have to do what you think you have to, but it's really important to do the things you love. So if you love drawing, do that. If you love working as a waitress in a restaurant because you love all the people, and then do that. And I hope eventually, listen, like my oldest daughter, the one who would walk away from me when I said, don't go to college. After 2 years, she left college and has been much better off just pursuing her dreams without the burden of living in the middle of nowhere trying to pursue her dreams. So
I want to return back to that, just saying, how do parents get out of their own way for this? Because I think it's more the parents in the way of a kid. Look, if they decide they want to go and they want to be an engineer, they want to be a dentist, have at it. Awesome.
Yeah.
But if it's not there, I think sometimes it is still the parents, you're an I age, who were in that world of the late 80s, early 90s going, holy, you're not going to have them go. Oh, they're going to be a peasant, you know, street cleaner. And that they have that in their mind. It's coming across still, to their kids.
Yeah.
How do they purge that? How do they get that out?
I hate hearing my children's friends be like, oh, I could never not go to college. My parents would disown me.
Yeah, we hear that stuff.
Yeah.
What's wrong with your parents?
It's really hard because you can't argue them out of it. Nobody listens to facts. If anything, the past few years has taught us is that there's facts all over the place. Facts are a dime a dozen and nobody listens. They kind of have their own set of facts. And it's hard for that, you know, it takes time for that needle to change. So it's again, just, and also you can't, on the one hand, you can't let them do whatever they want, because then there's so many examples where, oh, my kid wants to do this, just let him do it, like whatever. But and at the same time, you can't be too strict about what you want them to do. So I'm always like, I always try, and Robin, my wife's the same way. We always say what we believe and we make sure we're living by those examples and we give the reasons to the kids. And we don't even say, now you decide. It's just like, we just leave it at that. And hopefully they see the outcome with us and they decide whether they want that outcome or not. And if they do something we really don't like, we are still honest. We say we're disappointed, but punishment doesn't do anything. Maybe we say, okay, well, I don't know. I don't really know. Like, we might say, well, we're not going to get you a car because we want them to pay for their own car. And that's a valuable skill to learn, how to pay for your first car. And so if something's a valuable skill, we'll still lead by example. And they know they're not going to convince us of changing our philosophy about this. It's always by example.
Now, I know you, in the past, you've used our board meeting strategy. Are you still implementing those, even though the children are young adults?
You know, you guys have been doing this since I met Jim. So the board meeting thing, I'm flying to New York City tomorrow to do board meetings with my 24-year-old and 20-year-old. So that's what I'm doing. This week was all set aside to do that.
That's awesome. What are they?
I'm leaving right after this podcast, actually.
Oh man, that's awesome.
Yeah. So what does that look like? So they're not, this is awesome because we do have a lot of listeners that are like, oh, I missed it. They're 20 now and I didn't know about you guys until now. How do you implement these? So you're flying to where they are. And then you
the whole day to So do. What I might do is, and this, I think when they were younger, it was easier to do what you guys described, like spend a day where, you know, out in nature maybe, and
you focus
just on them and you don't, you know, whatever. But now I'll do like, now everybody's busy, they're busy, but I'll go in and I'll have like office hours with them. So like, I'll spend some time, we'll walk around the city, we'll have a meal or two, and they could tell me whatever's going on, what's on their mind, and so on. And it's free of judgment. So if they ask me for advice, sure. But otherwise, like for instance, one of my daughters is, she wants to be a writer. So again, I'm trying to live by example. And so she sent me some writing. This is like a year ago when she was first getting in, or 2 years ago when she was first getting into it. And it was pretty shocking what I was reading. She was writing about her life in New York City, and it was different than I expected. But then I gave a very hardcore, serious analysis of the writing. Like, and it's always constructive. Like, this is what I like. This is what I think, how I would do something. And we would go on Google Docs so she could see me typing and she could type stuff. And then we'd be on the phone. And then afterwards she asked me, well, why didn't you ask me about this, this, or this that I was doing? Cause it was all based on my life. And I said, well, that's fine. It was a good story. And I was just focused on the writing, but if you want to talk about that, we could talk about that.
Wow, you handled that well.
Wow. Yeah.
And well, so you being vulnerable, which you were speaking about vulnerability earlier, there's nothing more vulnerable than being a parent. Whew, somebody knows your story all day long.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. And how often do you align everyone's calendar? Do you do this once a month? Do you do this once a year? How often do you do these office hours with your big kids?
I guess it should be as much as possible, but because we're in different states now, it's a little bit more difficult. And I always try to like text them at least, but even that's hard to do sometimes every day. Like, I really feel I should do it every day, but I don't. And I know since I've moved out of New York State, they miss me a little bit more. So it's a little hard in that way. And I'm not really a communicator in a weird way. Like, I write and I speak and I do podcasts, but I'm not really a good one-on-one communicator, but I try as much as possible. Like I said, I'm going today. Recently, one of them visited me here. The next one will visit the next time. And I spend a lot of, Robin's kids come through this house more often, so I spend time with them. It's probably not, as they get older, it's not as much as I would like.
No, but that's such a great example because I think, one, you know, oftentimes parents just give up when their children move out. They're like, okay, well, whatever they want to do, you know, so at least you're making that, doing what you can when you can. That's our whole thing. Like, it's not about starting at one and making it all the way to the 18th summer. It's about doing what you can with what you have. So I just think that it's a great example of you saying, here's who I am and here's what I can do. And I'm sure that that just speaks volumes to them to know when you're there, you're all there.
Yeah. I think also it's good for me that I know at least, you know, some of my kids have read my stuff. So that's kind of a way indirectly. Again, I can outsource the living by example to writing the examples. So that's helpful as well.
Well, I think there's a huge testament to you there that you definitely got to high five yourself. The fact that you took the experiment on of being vulnerable, really showing all the artwork in the writing, putting it out there. And now it wasn't like poison ivy. Your daughter was like, oh my gosh, I don't want to touch that. It was like, wow, I want to be a writer. And she's actually going to you for writing advice, even though the content might be like, whoa, I'm your dad. What the heck is this? You know, and so that's got to have a good high five value to you right now, because I was, there had to be a risk feeling in this and saying, I'm doing the right thing as a writer, but I am doing the right thing as a dad.
Yeah. And it was really great for me. Like, she is much better than I was at that age for writing. Like, I think I wasn't very vulnerable in my writing when I was younger. And there was one line she had in one of her earlier stories where she was like really afraid to not be liked by this one person. And then she hated herself for wanting so much to be liked by this one person. And I thought that was a nice vulnerable thing that she wrote. Whereas like in my early writing, if I were to look at it, like I was like super cool and everything that I wasn't. So,
well, James, I could talk to you for another 20 years and I plan to, just not on this podcast.
Great.
You've been a huge inspiration to me in lots of ways. You've always been supportive since day one when we spoke together on stage. I've always respected that. I've always appreciated that. Your testimony of our board meetings is right on the front of the book.
Oh, excellent.
You're always, our name drop.
You're our name drop. It's, hey, I know James. So
and he, well,
James, I
chose you.
We've arrived.
We have a question left for you. That's sure. Kind of our finale question. And we came up with the beginning of the pandemic. And it's about your 75-year-old self. When the pandemic started, I said, I need to come at this at a higher, better angle. So I started to say, what would my 75-year-old self give me advice on right now? What's the advice you would give? So I'd love to hear, what do you think 75-year-old James would give advice to you as to you and to others?
Nothing you think is important.
Really?
All the things, you know, other than relationships with people like your children and friends and family and the way, you know, honesty is important, but no other thing in society or culture or anything like that is important. Like nothing. Wow. And you could survive with less money or more money. More money sometimes just makes me more unhappy. And you could survive with no social media. You know, all the time, I'm always trying to, and this is a problem I have. Like, I'm always trying to achieve things. Like, oh, I did stand-up comedy at this club, but now I've got to get reach for this club. And, you know, but none of that is important. Just me was improving the skill rather than where I was performing. Or I play for the first time in 25 years, getting back to, I used to be I was a very good chess player when I was a young person. I was a high ranking chess master. And now I'm for the first time in 25 years, I'm playing in tournaments again. And it's hard. And I need to tell myself that there's no goal with this. I just want to do it and improve, but I don't have to have a specific goal. And that's always hard to tell yourself, but that's what I would, if I was 75 years old, I'm pretty sure that's what I would tell myself.
Love it. That's great advice.
I feel like we're kind of living in that vibe right now too. That's interesting.
Yeah. We're following that path myself, James.
I hope so. You guys always seem like low stress, and I don't know if that is the case, but it's very important.
It'll peak and valley, but a lot of the times we are really committed to just simple adventure. And I think that's been really good for us.
I think that's really valuable. Yeah.
And it helps when he threatens the children right before we get on.
I did threaten them right before this podcast. So I said, you're not messing this one up.
Don't make any noise.
Because he comes in, he'll look into it like this for 5 minutes. You know that one. So
yeah,
you got to coach him out. So
sense of humor matters. And yes. I know that you get that.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great when the kids have sense of humor, because then you see, oh, here's, they're sparkling up now.
Yeah, we foster that. We definitely foster as much as we can, the practical joke side in this
lunacy
house. So,
yeah.
We love you, James. Thanks for everything, bud. We hope to see you soon. Hopefully we'll connect sooner in a later time. And thanks for everything. We look forward to sharing this podcast as soon as possible.
Well, thank you guys. I've lived by your principles as a parent, I'm sure much more than you've lived by mine. So thank you very much.
You've had a huge impact. Thanks again. And hopefully we'll talk soon, James.
Thank you guys.
Great trip.
Thanks. Yeah. Good trip to New York.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye. Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.